This is Gabrielle Denman interviewing Dr. Howard Mermelstein, November 15, 1990, behalf of the Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Number 2. I am the interviewer. Mary Harrison is the recorder.
Also, describe the office.
We're in Dr. Mermelstein's office on, what's the name of the street?
Dithard Street. Dithard Street.
Dr. Mermelstein, would you tell us, please? I should describe the room. On his desk are three wonderful children, which are your grandchildren, and lots of family memorabilia, and a copy of the Chagall stained glass windows that are in the Hadassah Hospital in Jerusalem. Am I right? And there's a wonderful eye chart here that says, "You are great, sincere, intelligent, well-adjusted, charming, personable," and I can't read the small print. And it's a wonderful, cheery office. I'm looking to see what else is here. He has a certificate from Children's Hospital.
Korea.
The Children's Hospital of Korea, right. We'll have to talk about that later. Okay, and a darling print, a Korean print of children. Now let's see if our
kids. All right, go ahead.
All right, let's talk some more about the research.
Yeah, the reason I primarily was interested in going into this particular phase of my medical education before being trained specifically in pediatrics is because at that time what we call the salt and water boys, which was fluid balance, was really something that was on the cutting edge at that particular time of medicine. And there weren't too many experts in the use of sodium, potassium, and chloride, the amounts of for dehydration, etc., in children. It was so important in the basics of learning really what at that time was very basic biochemical background of the body. And this is what this particular research department afforded me. I became an expert on fluid balance. And included in that, of course, was the balance studies we did with cortisone, and then that obviously led into some of the things we were interested in, which one project, for instance, was with rheumatic fever and rheumatic carditis, and we were experimenting not only on the amount of cortisone to be given, but what reactions it actually had on the disease process itself and on the outcome of the particular disease as it struck the children. It was a wonderful year. It gave me I think the undergraduates now get every bit of that as undergraduates. We didn't. And I felt that deficiency, and that's why I wanted the year that I had. And following that year, I went directly onto the floors at Children's Hospital as a resident in pediatrics.
Did you get paid then?
Oh, yeah.
How much?
$41.66 a month.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I was floating in it. Fortunately, my mother would come in each Sunday from Ambridge, and I'd get a $10 bill for the rest of the week. And at any rate, I started that July 1st of 1950, and in November of 1950, I was called, it reminds me of what's going on now with the Gulf crisis. I was called into the service. I was a naval reservist. And I was called in during the Korean War in November 1950. Supposedly, the Army doctors, not Navy, but the Army doctors in Japan had to go over to Korea. And that obviously the Army doctors from Japan had to be replaced, and they were being replaced, we were told, by the Army doctors in the United States. And 570 of us as Navy doctors were to replace, 570 of us were to replace the Army doctors in this country. And I'm sure some mistakes were made. As I got my orders by telephone, saying they wouldn't have enough time. I was an afterthought to all the other fellows who were going. Got their orders about 3 weeks before, and whatever happened, I don't know, but I got my orders over the telephone saying that I wouldn't have enough time if they'd have waited for my orders to be cut and sent to me. And I got a phone call on a Saturday to report 10 days later to Fort Sam Houston, Texas. And I remember I didn't believe, I thought one of my friends was kidding me. In those days, Children's Hospital was a very family kind of thing, and our telephone operators called us by first name. As a matter of fact, Dr. McCluskey, who none of us ever called anything except Dr. McCluskey, was called Mac by the telephone operator, who was older. And Dr. McCluskey, I was making rounds with Dr. McCluskey when I got this call, and May, who was the telephone operator, said, "Howard, you're wanted by BUMED in Washington, D.C. B-U-B-U-M-E-D, Bureau of Medicine of the Navy. And I said, "Oh, you're kidding." She said, "No, honestly." And I waved to Dr. McCluskey and I said, "I think someone's pulling my leg. It's Bureau of Medicine from Washington, D.C. So he gets on the other phone. "May, who's on the phone with Howard?" And all I did was shake his head. But, yep, it was Washington, D.C. That's how I got my orders. And I got to Fort Sam Houston, Texas, and I spent 5 days making out a will. I had nothing to leave, but you had to make wills out. And I was told not to worry, that I probably would stay right in the States because of my training in fluid balance, and they had a burn unit there. But before, after my interview with that, before they could get to the interviewing committee, I'd already been assigned to go over to the Far East. And at that time, my wife, who wasn't my wife then, who Bev and I had been dating, she was still, I guess she was a senior at Indiana University in Bloomington at that time. And we had a whirlwind 3.5 year romance, actually. But I called her to tell her I was going to the service. She met me with her parents. Those were the days we were kind of in Chicago on my way out to the West Coast. And we spent a weekend in Chicago, and then I with Beverly and her parents. And then on to the West Coast where I was interviewed. And they said, "Don't worry, you'll stop in Japan." And they flew us over, and we landed. Well, first, they flew us, in those days, there wasn't even a jet, they were props. And I forget how many hours it took us to get to Honolulu. We spent most of a day in Honolulu, where we enjoyed the beach, and then flew on to Wake Island, arrived in a storm.
Wake Island?
Wake Island. And from Wake Island, flew into Haneda Airport.
Spell that, please.
H-A-N-E-D-A, in Tokyo.
H-A-N-E-D-A.
And when I landed, wasn't more than a day, we were interviewed again, and the interviewing colonel asked me if I knew Dr. So-and-so from Pittsburgh. I said, "Yes, he's in Korea." And he said, "Yes, you're going to see him soon." Okay. And that's how I found out. So 3 weeks to the day, from the time I got my telephone orders in Pittsburgh, I landed at Incheon, Korea.
Spell that, please.
I-N-C-H-O-N.
I-N-C-H-O-N.
Mm-hmm. And the excuse that was given then was they had just had a lot of casualties. The Chinese had come in from the northern border and had a lot of casualties of physicians, and they needed replacements. But there's where it ended. I ended up, here I was a pediatrician, I ended up as port surgeon at Incheon. And the surgeons ended up in the battle, the aid stations up in the front. And I stayed in Incheon for about 6 or 7 weeks, at which point we were evacuated because the Chinese were coming in. And we ended up down in Pusan, down the Yellow Sea. It took us 2.5 days to get down in the storm. And that's where that picture there, the certificate of Children's Hospital of Korea, comes in.
And how do you spell Pusan?
P-U-S-A-N. I became a medical officer for the dispensary down at the, it was called the APO dispensary at the railroad station.
What does APO mean?
Well, that's where the mail came.
Okay.
But,
something post office.
While we were there, I was officer of the day one night, sleeping on a cot in the dispensary, when a Korean medical advisor, who was an army captain, came into the clinic and said, I need a doctor right away. I've got an orphanage up on the hill, and one of our children is dying. Mm-hmm. At which point I got one of my friends to cover for me, and I got in the Jeep with the captain, the Army captain, the American Army captain, and went in, and I took a look at this Korean kitty, and he was almost black. I had never seen diphtheria in my life. All I had done was read about it. And took a look at the kid, and he had a web, a diphtheritic web over the back of his throat, and he was choking to death. So I asked the captain where the Korean doctor was who was taking care, and he said he went back to bed because he said there was nothing else to do, which made it clear to me that probably the cheapest commodity at that time they had in Korea was human life itself. So I had him wake him up, and I had never done a tracheotomy in my life, and I was hoping he had done a tracheotomy, the Korean doctor. He didn't know from squaddledy-doo. And I had to do a tracheotomy, and I sent the captain down to our dispensary to get diphtheria.
You're
going to
spell tracheotomy, aren't you?
T-R-A-C-H-E-O-T-O-M-Y. T-R-A-C-H-E-O-T-O-M-Y.
That's what they cut.
Oh, I know what it is. Thank you.
And they brought back diphtheria antitoxin, and I private duty this little kid for about 24 hours, and he made it. And incidentally, the Korean doctor, after seeing that, I'm told he ended up some years later coming to the States for training, even into pediatrics. So at any rate, when I saw what was there, it was a veritable museum of chronic pediatric diseases, with the orphans going down from the front that were in this orphanage. And there was another doctor who at the present time is professor and chairman of the Department of Community Medicine at the University of Missouri, Julio Barbero.
Julio?
Barbero, B-A-R-B-E-R-O.
B-A-R?
B-E-R-O. And he had been called out of training at the from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He went to the University of Penn. And I just met him. I called and I said, we have an unbelievable opportunity here for these kids. So he came running over in his Jeep, and when we started to look around, we just couldn't let it go. So in our off-duty hours from our dispensaries, his and mine, we set up almost like a stateside hospital with these kids. And I saw all these kids with these big bellies, and I thought, my God, how many kids could they have with nephrosis? I just, as I said, just came out of a department which had a lot of nephrosis, which is a kidney disease where they have a backlog of fluid in their belly. And until I realized this wasn't nephrosis at all, it was nutritional.
Please spell nephrosis.
N-E-P-H-R-O-S-I-S.
P-H-R-O-S-I-S,
nephrosis. I realized it wasn't nephrosis at all. These children had nutritional edema. They weren't getting enough protein and enough of the proper electrolytes, and they were just swelling. And we looked at other things. What we did was we organized. We went to the station hospital and got an orthopedist who was same boat as we were. Got an anesthesiologist. Had a fellow by the name of Bepler, B-E-P-L-E-R. B-E-P-L-E-R.
B-E-P-L-E-R.
Who had come from Temple. He was an internist, or was training to be an internist. And the Jutlandia, J-U-T.
Wait a minute. J-U-T.
L-A-N-D-I-A.
J-U-T-L-A-N.
D-I-A. The Jutlandia, which was a Swedish hospital ship. had just arrived in the Pusan harbor, and the chief of that ship turned out that he had just finished his neurosurgery up in Boston and had been at Children's Hospital in Boston and was very well versed in surgery with children. And he gave us a room, he set aside a room for children on his Danish hospital ship. And we had a couple of kids came down as head cases from the front that we sent out. He saved with his neurosurgical know-how on the ship. So it was an experience which was one of the most unbelievable experiences I've ever had in my life, where it was the first children's hospital that Pusan ever had in 4,000 years. And it is now a permanent part of the medical school in Pusan.
No wonder they gave you a certificate.
They gave me a certificate before I left.
That's beautiful.
I got that.
So if it hadn't been by chance that this kid had the diphtheria, this
I'd
might have never
known
had.
It was there. Yeah.
Did they also give you the print?
Yes.
That's lovely.
The print was given by them, and those are Korean children around an organ. As a matter of fact, I have a, when Bev and I were married, when I got back from Korea, we didn't lose much time. We got engaged and then got married.
Okay, what year was this?
1951.
So you were in the service how long?
Well, we spent our first year of marriage was a honeymoon in the Navy. So we were married October 25th, 1951, and I was in the
October
Navy until November
25th.
1951, and we were in the Navy till November 1st, 1951.
But then, after you were married, you were in the States?
No, yes, well, yeah. Yeah, I came back in June of 51 is when I came back to the States. And I was sent to the Naval Air Station in Norfolk.
Sent away to the Naval
Air Station in Norfolk, the Dependence Clinic. Bev and I got engaged, and then we were married in October. And while we were there, we went to the United Nations because I had been interviewed, very similar to today, by someone from the UN who wanted to know all about this dispensary or to our hospital we were setting up, and it was taped. And I have that tape at home. We picked up, and they knew exactly where to get it when we walked into the UN. Within 20 minutes of the time we were there, we had the tape, and we were off with it. They made a copy for us. But that was a remarkable experience. And at the other end, while we were there, I went to, while I was in Pusan, not too far out of the city, it was a leprosy colony. Who knew from lepers? And we must have seen 150 lepers at this particular colony. One I'll never forget was a nursing mother who had the typical, what we call leontine, L-E-O-N.
Oh, wait a minute, L-E?
L-E-O-N-T-I-N-E, leontine faces, where the eyebrows were gone completely, part of the nose was gone, nubbins for fingers, and she had a baby on her back. Must have been a year and a half old, suckling from the breast. It was unbelievable. Smallpox, who knew from smallpox? I saw cases of smallpox in Korea. The other end of the medical spectrum that you always read about and learned because you were sure some son of a gun was going to quiz you on it, but you never dreamed you'd see it, I saw there. It was just a very maturing, very sobering experience, which I think set my lifestyle in medicine pretty definitely at that time. Bev and I got back to, well, before we were married, I was awarded a commendation medal for my work in Korea, and they had the dress parade. I'll never forget. There was a very proud moment. Here was my fiance standing there in line, and the marching and the whole bit, and I was not much of a serviceman, but I sure was moved in. And I guess I can still say when I hear the Star Spangled Banner play, I get chills. And I think it goes back to the days in the service when you really learn what it was all about. But at any rate, I spent a year then in the Dependence Clinic just outside of the Naval Air Station in Norfolk. Bev and I were there for a year. Made some marvelous friends, civilian friends in Norfolk who still live there, and then came back to finish my residency at Children's here in Pittsburgh, November 1st of 1952. And then I spent another 18 months there, and then couldn't decide whether to go into academia or whether to go into practice. Dr. McCluskey at that time wanted me to take over the newborn nurseries at McGee. There was no such thing as a specialty in neonatology, but he really had lots of visions, and he wanted to start that at McGee. And frankly, at that point, I was down, as I told you, $41.66 a month.
And a wife?
I was and a wife and a pregnant wife. Our Margie was born 6 days before I went into practice.
Okay, what was that day?
She was born
June. No, women pregnant?
Wife. And I explained to Dr. McCluskey that I couldn't afford further training, and he said, oh, this will be paid.
How much?
$3,500 a year.
That was a lot of money.
When was Margie born?
Margie was born June 25th, 1954. At which point I said, you know, Dr. McCluskey, I really have to get private practice out of my blood first. He said, fine. You're going to open up in Oakland. You're going to practice in Oakland. And in 2 years, you'll be back with me. But you'll never leave because where you're going to be on part of our teaching staff to begin with. And he really sort of molded my life from there. I had even toyed with the idea of going back down to Swickley to practice pediatrics. There was only one pediatrician down there. Dr. Lou Weiss, W-E-I-S-S.
I meant Lou Weiss.
Louis Weiss was an ear, nose, and throat there. When I was a kid, he was our general practitioner. And Lou went away for ear, nose, and throat training. He was a marvelous ear, nose, and throat man at Swickley. And he tried to talk me into going into ear, nose, and throat, which was not my forte. And then he tried to talk me into coming down to Swickley to practice, at which point Dr. McCluskey got wind of it, and that's when he made it clear, you will stay in Oakland, and you will practice in Oakland. And you did it. Those were the days when you said, yes, sir. And it was probably one of the most important decisions I ever made in my life, because it's just been a marvelous way to live and practice, both in the Gentile and Jewish community. Obviously, I stayed as a private, got the better part of both worlds, as a private practitioner, but I've been fortunate enough to be with the university all these years, and very close to Children's Hospital and its teaching mission.
So you have an appointment at the university?
Yeah, at this,
an academic
this particular time, I'm clinical associate professor of pediatrics.
Okay. Clinical
associate professor of pediatrics. I have been fortunate enough that I've had lots of activities in medicine, and again, I emphasize, whether you're Jewish or Gentile, it really doesn't make a hell of a lot of difference. We sometimes use the excuse that we didn't get such and such because we're Jewish. When I was a senior in medical school, I was president of our medical fraternity, which is Phi D E.
Wait a minute,
but that's a Jewish fraternity.
That was a Jewish at that time. Was a Jewish fraternity. Mm-hmm.
Phi.
That was it. Phi D E. Phi Delta Epsilon.
Right. I have a pin of it.
Yeah, my sister does too. Or maybe my wife does too.
At any rate,
following that, I've had many committee appointments at the university.
Can you elaborate?
Yeah, I've been on the admissions committee. At the present time, on the clinical faculty promotions committee. I'm a past president of the Pittsburgh Pediatric Society. I'm a past president of the Medical Alumni Association, the University of Pittsburgh. I'm a past president of the Allegheny County Medical Society. Was a vice president chairman of its board of trustees, on its foundation, and a member of the board for many years. I'm a past president of Children's Hospital Medical Alumni Group. I'm a past president of the staff of Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. It's really been a marvelous experience. Marvelous experience. In addition to that, I've been able to enjoy both the Gentile and Jewish community activities. I'm a past chairman of the Physicians Division of United Way. I've been on the board on several occasions, United Jewish Federation of Pittsburgh. I am a past president of the Jewish Family and Children's Service here in Pittsburgh. And I'm a past president of the Forward Housing that we have. As a matter of fact, I helped establish it. That's up in Squirrel Hill.
That's in the movie theater.
Right?
Yeah,
Squirrel Hill. It's the corner of Forward and Shady.
Right.
And I served my time as president of that. So I've had a marvelous opportunity to have a lot of involvement. I'm still active in the Jewish Family and Children's Service. Matter of fact, my wife is on the board, and our son at the present time is treasurer of the Board of Jewish Family and Children's Service. I think it's the first time there have been three members of one family.
That's fantastic.
On that board. Yeah, it's been wonderful seeing it happen.
One second, Matt, interrupt you. Your son is named what?
My son's Bob.
Bob.
Robert.
And he was born?
Bob was born, it's Freddie. Bob was born November 2nd, 1957.
Okay. Do you have other children?
My youngest is our daughter, Jan. Jan was born June 26th, 1960. Margie is married to one of my associates, Paul Dubner.
Margie's married to Paul?
Paul Dubner, D-U-B-N-E-R. Margie went to Northwestern undergraduate and then got her master's in speech here at Pitt. That's how she met Paul while he was in medical school.
When was she born?
Margie, June 25th, 1954. Paul had gone to Columbia, graduated from Columbia undergraduate, and then graduated from Pitt Medical School, and he trained here at Children's Hospital. They have two marvelous children.
Cool.
Seth, who is seven, and I kid Paul all the time that he's my clone.
Is that S-E-T-H?
Yeah. Yeah, Seth. Seth's seven. And Mimi, they live out in Marbury Road. He's in second grade at Schaefer School out there. Mimi, M-I-M-I, and that's her name, Mimi. That's not a shortcut. That's her name. Mimi's 4 and a half. She'll be five. And she's a Shady Lane school. And they're the loves of having my life. They're as comfortable sleeping in our house as they are sleeping at their own. We just have a marvelous time with them. And our son, Bob, has his MBA. He graduated from Indiana University in Bloomington in finance. He had always said he wanted to be not just a doctor, but a pediatrician. When he got to school, he realized there was another world out there. And he'd been in the scholars program here at Alderdice and had been an advanced placement in calculus, and was helping some of the business students with what he called Mickey Mouse calculus. But he started to get interested. So he came home and said, "Dad, do you mind if I don't go into medicine?" And I threw up twice and said, "No, I don't care. Nobody cares for me." And he went, he kept his options open, but then he finished through. He graduated in finance at IU and came back to Pitt and got his MBA.
Was the CAT school already?
No. It wasn't called CATS. It was the business school, but it wasn't CATS yet.
IU is
Indiana University, Bloomington. As versus Indiana University of Pennsylvania, Bloomington, Indiana. And then he got his MBA here at Pitt, and he got his CPA. He was with Coopers & Lybrand, an accounting firm, and then decided he wanted to go into his own business, and he's in an investment advisor. Well, I told he's an expert in 401k pension plans at this point. And Bob is the father of our grandchild, Brandon. He's an adorable little boy who's going to be 3 in January. Jan, our youngest daughter, graduated from Indiana University in Bloomington, as did her mother and her uncle. As a matter of fact, there have been 26 or 27 from my wife's side of the family and my side of the family went to Indiana University. When we went to Bob's graduation from IU, an uncle of mine and an aunt of mine were at their 50th class reunion from dental school IU. My aunt graduated from dental school, and she was the first Jewish gal to graduate from dental school at IU. That was, I guess, now 60 years ago. At any rate, she lived in Indianapolis. My uncle, who was my mother's, he was a burger, my mother's brother, went to dental school at IU and never came back. He stayed and opened up there. Matter of fact, that's how Bev and I met. They were close friends, family friends, and she was in his dental chair before she came to Pittsburgh to visit her very close friend, who was Marcel Apter. And we're still very close friends. And she came here. Matter of fact, I met